If you come into a coaching session and you're skeptical, my obligation is to get you over that curb to entry. And in some cases, it can be a pretty high bar. But that's my obligation as your coach, regardless of how you showed up in my world.
You're listening to the Building a Coaching Culture podcast. If you need to compete and win in the 21st century labor market as an employer of choice, this podcast is for you. Each week, we share leadership development, coaching, and culture development insights from leading experts who are developing world-class cultures in their own organizations. And now, here's your host, J.R. Flatter.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. J.R. Flatter here with my co-host, Lucas.
Hello.
How you doing today?
Very good. I realize I'm answering the same way every time, so very good.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it's funny you mention that because people often ask me, how you doing? And I tend to say I'm doing amazing because I generally am, just because I'm pretty blessed and have a great life and great career, great family. But then I realize, and I feel guilty sometimes because people aren't. And especially when I'm their coach and I know they're working through some challenges, but you know, it's genuine. So I guess I'll just keep struggling.
I think it factors into the topic though. You know, it's like, if you feel like you can control things or you have things that you can do to fix things or improve things, then they're in your hands and you've got a grip around them, then you feel pretty good generally, I think.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, because I think that's something that we want to impart upon the leaders that we work with, is that same understanding that, and this is one of our favorite questions, at least mine as a coach, what's in your control? Like gravity and the speed of light, you can worry about those all you want, not much you can do about them. But do you believe you have the ability to influence the path of your life? There are two schools of philosophy on that. One is a school of philosophy that is people, the philosophers believe your life is predetermined. And then there's another school that you have complete control. And it's one of the few places I sit on the fence. I don't tend to sit on the fence, but I think you do have a lot of control of your life. But also, I think there's a lot of things out of my control and coming to peace with them and not accepting them at face value either. Something you may consider initially out of your control. And we talk a lot about this in our coaching and our coach education, is self-limiting beliefs and self-limiting behaviors. And how do you break out of them? It's a huge part of our coaching. I'm not sure how we got started on that tangent, but today we wanted to talk about a philosophy that we have in our coaching education world. And that is, if you're able, you have some obligation. And there's several facets of this. There's the ethics and core values of coaching, just some pretty strong beliefs we have about the role of leaders and the role of coaches, create some obligations. Your role in society, and this comes from an intersection of morality, ethics, and the core values of the coaching profession. They all talk about what's your role in society, not just what's your role at home, what's your role at work, what's your role as a coach? But the core values of coaching actually ask us and give us obligations to our role in society. So I wanted to talk about each of those as we talk about if you're able, then you have some obligation. And I said probably earlier on, I think I'm going to be a little more prescriptive and take the probably out. If you're able, you're obligated. And I'll start the conversation in the realm of leadership and then expand it later on to include coaching. So as leaders, we talk regularly about this intersection of willingness and ability. So you find yourself at that intersection of willingness and ability, and it's a yes on both. You're willing to be a leader, and you're able to be a leader. You've gotten past your archetypical hero role where you're hesitating and saying, no, this isn't for me. And I love that metaphor that you brought into our conversation. And you said, yes, I'm willing and able. Henceforth, for the rest of your life, I would say you have an obligation to lead because of that gift, because of that discovery. that willingness and that ability. And I'll explain a little more before I pass over to you. I don't mean this pejoratively. I don't mean that this is a better or worse, right or wrong. But the vast majority of the 8 billion of us in the world don't have that gift yet. If you practice the fundamentals of leadership and you gain some confidence and some efficacy that you, in fact, can be a leader, you can learn to lead. So it's not a I'm born with or not. I crossed that threshold decades ago. And even the scholarship of leadership crossed that threshold a long time ago. We've only been studying leadership for about 150 years scholastically. We used to think about leaders as being born and being born as great. But we crossed that threshold academically decades ago, and me personally decades ago. You, in fact, can learn to lead. Just like you can learn to dribble a basketball, you can learn to strum a guitar, you can learn how to draw cartoons, which you're all the above. At least I know your son's a basketball player. I don't know if you are. But once you've crossed that threshold and you've donned the leadership hat, I don't mean this as everybody gets a trophy statement, but you are now exceptional. An exception being the EX is outside. You're outside the norm. So if you looked at a normal diagram, a normal curve, average being in the middle, average capacity to lead, you're now on the right side of that. You're above average in your willingness and ability to lead others. And in your lifelong journey, you'll get farther and farther outside of the norm. Again, not right, wrong, or judgmental, but just reality of the world we live in. And I consider that discovery and that willingness and ability a gift. And I cherish that gift. And that gift comes with obligations to turn around and help those that don't have that gift.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that comes to mind first up is like just examples of, you know, what happens if you don't take control, and when you're able, you don't behave as if you're obligated. Like, you know, a simple, silly example, like, you know, there's a bunch of dishes in the sink. You see them, you know, it's a problem. If you don't, you know, take care of it, is your wife going to have to take care of it? Is it going to get worse and smelly? And then you're going to have to do it tomorrow, but it's twice as hard because everything's caked on there. So you're either kicking it down the road where it's worse for yourself to have to do it in the future, or you're putting the responsibility on somebody else that maybe it wasn't supposed to be on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that metaphor. And it's not ironic that it's a personal metaphor, because you and I teach and coach at the intersection of personal and professional. You know, and actually one of my pet peeves of late is this idea that leadership and coaching are soft skills. They are so absolutely necessary in the 21st century. I'm doing my absolute best to push that out of common language. They're skills. They're not soft or hard. And you and I talk about the technical, cognitive, and emotional continuum. Emotional intelligence is an imperative in the 21st century. So a few sessions ago, we talked about self and self-efficacy. Part of my self-efficacy as a coach and a leadership developer is pushing this idea out of my mind that my contributions are somehow less worthy because they're not technical or cognitive. They're emotional intelligence based. So let's bring it into the coaching realm. If you are able, you're obligated. So you've learned the fundamentals of coaching. You're probably a leadership in some capacity, almost certainly a leader in some capacity, because the two are so intertwined. At a minimum, you're a leader within the coaching world, and you're helping others discover and grow. And for me, that's a central component of leadership, turning around and developing others that are coming after me, even alongside of me. And if you're thinking in a hierarchical organization chart above me, so I guess it's a 360 obligation to develop others as a leader. And now I've added coach into my basket of knowledge, skills, abilities, and experiences. I have an obligation to coach. And one of the things you and I talk about, and this goes back to the obligation of peace, everyone wants, needs, and deserves your leadership. Well, concurrently, everyone wants, needs, and deserves your coaching. And will you remain vigilant in your willingness and ability to provide them coaching? It doesn't have to be formal relationships. It can be, and often is, as your style of leadership. So you and I coach in sponsored environments a lot. And so I suspect we get more unconvinced skeptics than if we were coaching in a B2C world, in a coach to consumer world, where everyone comes to you readily. And I've had this conversation with my coach, who has a very specific niche, and everyone who comes to them is a volunteer and is enthusiastic and eager. Well, that isn't exactly the case in a sponsored environment. One of the statistics I've stumbled across recently is that as high as 85% of all human beings will resist change, irrespective of the validity, the necessity, the change. It's just a human instinct. And so I put that same brush on people who show up in our coaching practices that are sponsored. I expect more than 80% of them to be initially skeptical. And I feel a very strong obligation to them, however they showed up, voluntarily and enthusiastic or involuntarily and skeptical. I feel a very strong obligation to help them grow, to help them discover, to help them get over the threshold. In economics, we call it the curb to entry. If you come into a coaching session and you're skeptical, unenthusiastic, or combative even, not physically combative, but verbally combative, emotionally combative, mentally combative, my obligation is to get you over that curb to entry. And in some cases, it can be a pretty high bar. But that's my obligation as your coach, regardless of how you showed up in my world. What do you think as you look at your own coaching practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think something else that comes to mind is a question that we ask a lot of times when we're interviewing guests. It's what would you say, you know, to your younger self, or what would you say to somebody that's 10 years younger than you or starting their career? It's everybody has that idea of like, you know, I wish somebody had treated me this way, or wish somebody had asked me these things, or, you know, I wish I had learned X or Y or Z. You, by having that thought, are able to give that to somebody else, that I wish somebody gave this to me. You now are able to give that to somebody else. So yeah, just think about how would that change you in that moment. And so that's the responsibility that you have when you're starting this coaching session.
Yeah, brilliant insight as usual. And I'm thinking about, you know, 20th century mentoring compared to 21st century coaching. And I'm not being judgmental in aging or timestamping mentoring, because there is a very valid need for mentoring in the 21st century. But I would strongly encourage coaches and leaders to coach first, or have an inclination toward a coaching style of leadership, and mentor by exception and coach by rule. And there's several reasons that I believe that. And I think this has been borne out again and again. I know it's been borne out again and again in our coaching practice and in our coach education practice, that coaching is more attuned to the 21st century labor market and to success in 21st century business. It's not lost on anyone that it's a global labor market. It's largely virtual. There are not infinite choices, but a lot of choices. New understanding and expectation of what a career looks like. And here's a direct example. The 20th century work model was learn, work, retire. And when you started working, you had some reasonable assurances that what you had learned would be relevant until you retired. I see you smile. You have no expectation of that. And you're a millennial. Think about the Gen Zs and the Gen AAs coming right behind them. that are filling the labor market. You know, Gen Zs are the predominant population in the labor market already. Gen AAs will be there before we know it. I think your son's Gen AA. He's coming up, and his cousins, they're all coming up. They're going to be in the labor market very soon. And are we coaching them on learn, work, learn, work, learn, work, learn, work? And I don't consider it selfishness at all. I think it's a survival instinct. But the 21st century labor market has dedication to self and craft, because the organizations they work for and with are going to ebb and flow across their working life. And so I don't mean this cynical in any way. The idea that there was ever loyalty to an organization was a fallacy. People were loyal, quote unquote, because that was the only gig in town. And you could learn, work, and retire at that same organization. So it was convenient. There were probably a lot of things about that organization that drove you nuts, but they had good benefits. They had a retirement. But now, in the 21st century, it's vastly different, requires a very different style of leadership. So I would go as far as to say, you are obligated to lead them with a 21st century style of leadership, which is a coaching style of leadership.
This goes back to where we started the conversation, where if you believe that, you know, the universe is deterministic, in other words, you know, like it's a pool board, and every time I hit this billiard ball, it intersects with this one, and then this happens. And if you believe that, you know, the labor market is that way, then it's easy to say that mentoring is the best course, because you're like, you know, these 10 things will lead to success 90% of the time, and therefore it doesn't matter, you know, who the individual is, this will generally work. But if you observe how it is these days, or just systems that, you know, aren't deterministic, like the weather, you know, it's 5% humidity versus 6% humidity, and there's a tornado versus, you know, a completely perfect clear day. If you believe that, you know, the system is very sensitive to your individual, then you say, okay, let's talk to the individual, and let's not act like, you know, I have the course to success because I know how chaotic the system is.
Probably 25 or 30 years ago, there was this, a lot of thought and a lot of writing, a lot of thinking about chaos theory. You probably come across it in your studies. And the idea was, you know, the world is in chaos. And we talk about entropy all the time. You know, leaders and coaches help control entropy, which is the scientific principle that the world's falling apart around us all the time. And if you have the ability to control that entropy, I would say you have an obligation to control that entropy. And behaving as if there weren't chaos is falling short of your obligations. Which, you know, I think, especially as a boomer, I'm an analog. I grew up in an analog world with centralized command and control, largely a learn, work, retire world. And now I'm living and attempting to thrive and survive in a 21st century chaotic world where employees expect to have a great deal of autonomy. They expect, whether they desire to or not, to learn, work, learn, work, learn, work, maybe retire, maybe not, maybe work because they can and want to. And I recognize that even in my boomer status, I have an obligation to commit to communicate that up, down, and sideways, which I think is, or I know, is one of the reasons I'm so passionate about coaching and so passionate about 21st century cultures. I'm so passionate about coaching education. As I see, I'm not clairvoyant, but I can see 30 years into the future and how different it's going to be. You and I talk all the time about Moore's Law being dead, which was the rule of how long it took technology to double in capacity or speed. I forget exactly. I think it was speed. That's dead and gone. It's measured in minutes and days, not years. And so your peers and everyone younger than you, I have an obligation to build a culture that welcomes and encourages them rather than tolerates them. Hopefully we've done that here in our own company. I'll leave it to you and others to decide. I know we're helping the leaders that we work with develop those cultures in their organizations.
I also think about that, like, born leader versus, you know, a leader that develops. And lots of times, like, say you hire somebody to be the CEO, you say, here's your position, here's all of your levers of control that we expect you to use to, you know, find success. Maybe if you're a developing leader, nobody's said, here are your levers of control, here's what you need to do to be more successful. And maybe they change every single day, you know. So this person with this particular position of power, it might be more explicit, but the person that has less power on paper still has all of these abilities to change things, but they're just not obvious. So I think as a coach, you are trying to see more of these possibilities for change. And if you're being coached, hopefully, you know, you're identifying more things in your life that you do have control over.
Yeah, brilliant insight as usual. I think you're touching on a topic for another day, and that is this harmonic dissonance in music. Two notes clash, but they sound pleasant to the ear. And that is the intergenerational clashes. So the 20th century model was, if you had time on the job, you were probably more valuable and could contribute greater than someone who had been there less time. And so your abilities were measured by your tenure. Well, that's kind of not entirely gone away. There's a great opportunity for harmonic dissonance here. I'm experiencing that this afternoon. There's something wrong with my computer in my home office. I don't know how to fix it. And a millennial is going to come to my house and help me fix it. And I have every expectation. He is infinitely more qualified than I am, even though I've been using computers since 1987. I'm very willing to let someone with a lot less tenure come in and fix my computer. And in a digital 21st century world, your ability and your willingness to contribute is not measured by time. No, I say harmonic dissonance because when I look at Shakespeare's seven acts of life, me being in the fifth act, you in your third or fourth act, and my grandchildren in their second and third acts, we're all at different places in life and maturation, experiences, school of hard knocks. And so there still remains something to be said for time and things that can only be acquired over time. So that's why I advocate for harmonic dissonance in the 21st century workplace. One of the things I see my millennial peers doing is sacrificing existential core values for 21st century desires. So just like I say that we have no control over the speed of light or the force of gravity, there are existential things in every organization, irrespective of its mission and vision, that we must agree on if we're going to work together. So when I look at this harmonic dissonance, that's part of it. Part of it is not always compromising. Part of it is having the willingness and ability and the obligation to say, this is existential. We can't compromise on this. Now, everything else, the way you wear your hair, the way you talk, the way you dress, we can have conversations about all those things, but there's probably two or three things that we must absolutely agree on. In a for-profit business, revenue has to exceed expense. In a nonprofit business, the services have to be valuable to our constituents. In a government organization, are we serving the taxpayers and the entity that we're serving? So there are those existential non-negotiables. But we, both sides of the discussion, have to agree on them, or we simply can't work together. And so my closing is going to be on the core competencies and what obligations they give us, and the ethics and what obligations they give us. It's going to be a bit academic here at the end, but I think it's valuable nonetheless. So you and I, as we've said many times over, subscribe to the International Coaching Federation. So there are 8 competencies. And if you look at the markers by which you demonstrate those 8 competencies, 40-something markers. But the very first competency is demonstrating an ethical practice. Ethics belongs to the organization. So are you following the ethics of the organization you work for and the ethics of coaching? That's competency 1 in the coaching world, and you are obligated to follow that. Staying in a coaching mindset, being curious, but curious on behalf of the leader I'm coaching, flexible, open-minded, those are all part of a coaching mindset. You have an obligation. Establishing and maintaining agreements. One of the part of that agreement is if I'm coaching, you're in the driver's seat and I'm in the passenger seat. Cultivating trust and safety. So maintaining confidentiality, not giving you advice hidden in questions. I've decided this is an opportunity to coach, and so I will build trust and safety towards coaching. Maintaining presence. I'm going to be here. I'm not multitasking on you. I'm not looking at my phone. I am checking the clock because time's usually not our friend. And then listens actively, which is a skill unto itself, probably one of the hardest things we do as leaders and coaches, is actually listen and listen to understand, not to respond, to borrow from Franklin Covey. Evoking awareness, one of the fundamentals and one of the biggest obligations is if you connect 2 dots in a coaching session, it's your obligation to connect them and give them back to the leader. If you hear them say something that you think they didn't hear themselves say, it's your obligation to bring that back into the room. And then ultimately, you have an obligation to facilitate their growth, personally and professionally. And if you're in a sponsored environment, not necessarily on behalf of the sponsor, I would say 20% of all coaching relationships that I engage in, and I hope no potential customer shies away, they learn that they're in the wrong profession or they're in the wrong job. And I tell the sponsors before that happens, if you're going to hire me and our team, this isn't a potential outcome. But nonetheless, you have that obligation. And then finally, the core values or the ethics, professionalism, collaboration between coaches, humanity, to be a human and contribute to the human race. And then what the ICF calls equity. Stay in a coaching mindset. Understand the best you can the person that you're coaching and where they're at. So that's the ethics and the core values. And if you're able, you're obligated.
Yeah, that made me think about just like thinking about the opposite, like in times when you might need to have more of an authoritarian approach, like maybe it is existential, or, you know, some accident's going to happen, somebody's going to get hurt. If your kid's about to run into the street, you need to be, you know, authoritative and say, like, no, you can't take a step into the street, and go grab them if you need to, take complete control over the situation. But if you're teaching anything else, if you're inside, everybody's safe, then you're obligated to take the person's feelings into account, to respect the individual, make it a more comfortable environment, that psychological safety, everything. And it's not always that you are able. So when you are able, you know, you need to lean into it even more, because, you know, if it's a life or death situation, you can't necessarily.
No, that's beautiful insight. Yeah, as a grandparent and a parent, as much autonomy as you want to give, that's the one thing. There's no question. It's existential. If I say stop, you must stop. Beyond that, there's a lot of flexibility, a lot of autonomy you can have. And do it safely. All right, my friend. Good to see you. As always, good session.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you soon. Well, that concludes this episode of Building a Coaching Culture. I truly hope that this episode was helpful to you. If it was, be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Maybe stop and give us a rating or a review and share this podcast with someone who might find it helpful as well. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.